this edition of Club Talk, the new club's fortnightly podcast. Today, I'm delighted to have the opportunity of talking to Bettina Evans, or to use her professional name, Bettina Carr Allison. Many of you know Bettina and her husband, Mike Evans, but few of us know what an exceptional life she has led before she came to Cheltenham. Welcome, Bettina. I certainly look forward to hearing more about your many achievements in education, particularly with the young people of Europe. But first, tell us a little bit about your early life, where you grew up, and so on.
Well, I was born in the Netherlands, in The Hague, just after the war. My father was in the army and then was made prisoner of war, so he had lots of stories to tell us. My mother was an academic, and we had a lovely youth. Three brothers joined me. They were a bit of a pain, really, but you know, it was a good family life, and we went to good schools, and then I went on to university.
So from university, when you went on to university, you were ready to, after university?
Yes, well, the idea was that I was going to study history, but my parents convinced me that it was would be much nicer to go to Paris and study French. So I ended up at the Sorbonne studying French language and literature. And I had an absolutely fantastic time. I remember late evenings in a little joint called the Lapin Agile, where we were all singing French chansons and drinking cherry brandy. So it was great.
It sounds like a very good university life. But then you were ready to start your working life, and you found yourself with a job at the Dutch Foreign Office, I think, in The Hague. And so was it there that you found your first love of international relations?
Yes, it certainly was. It was very interesting. I was the assistant to the director of European Cooperation. The European Common Market, of course, at the time, not yet the European Union. And very often I had a red-rimmed telex on my desk, which was coming from General de Gaulle, saying yet another no to the United Kingdom becoming part of the Common Market. And my boss then had to write speeches for the Foreign Secretary to tell Parliament what was going on and how they could possibly change things. Which was a very interesting thing to do. And that, again, it was a motivating time.
So you also, at that time, met your husband, David, who sadly died some years later. But you were bringing up children and travelling frequently between Paris and London. So there was very little time, very little precious time for you to develop your own interests at that stage. But nevertheless, with your children growing up bilingual, which was something that was very important to you, you developed a really deep love of international education for young people.
Yes, well, I obviously wanted the best sort of education for my own children and for them to grow up as bilingual human beings. And so I had to do something, because where we lived in Fontainebleau, there was no international education for them. And since NATO left Fontainebleau in 1963, when there was an international school, only a German section remained. So I took it upon myself to start an Anglophone section. I had no experience in education, but it couldn't be rocket science. And I hired teachers, got the curriculum sorted out, and went to the international school head to say, well, can we have a private section, fee-paying, in your state school? And he said, absolutely not. So I then had to go to the Ministry of Education in Paris and talk to all the people there to try and convince them that this was not a bad idea. And I offered to give English lessons to all the French children so that it would not just be the English section that would benefit, but the French section would as well.
Bettina, it was obviously a very important role that you played there and really established yourself into that whole area of international relationship, particularly for the youth. But I'd like to now just come on to some other extraordinary achievements that you've made in advancing those youth education in Europe. Please tell us how you got into that, which was away from the day-to-day school.
Yeah, well, the school showed me working with 16 different nationalities who all had some knowledge of English, and working with INSEAD, the professors there, their children all came to what was then my Anglophone section, how important it was that they learned about culture and religion and the ideas of other people and other countries. So I thought, well, we might as well do something for Europe at large rather than just in Fontainebleau. So I talked to some of my friends and we had a dinner and they said, well, the first person who comes up with a good idea, we will all put our weight behind it. And so I said, well, let's create the European Youth Parliament, a parliament for young people where they will learn how to discuss different topics together and come to a consensus as to what would be the best way forward. Wrote the curriculum and presented it to them, and they all said, that's a fantastic plan, let's do it. So I then started writing to the Prime Minister of France, Jacques Chirac, and to all sorts of important people to try and get them on board so that it would be easier to fundraise for this, because obviously no one had ever heard of the European Youth Parliament. And I went to see the president of the European Parliament to ask him if I could use the name European Youth Parliament. It was an amazing session with him in a huge office where he sat behind his desk and he said, tell me all about it. And he didn't say another word after that and just let me talk. And it was very disconcerting. But in the end, he said, this is a very good idea. I wish I'd had it myself. And then he wrote a letter for all the European institutions to support me in setting up this new project.
Tina, I love hearing all about that because you made a main difference in children's understanding of international relations. But it didn't really stop there, did it? Because you then had great success and won many awards for the work you did with the European youth. And after that, they were all going off to university and you decided, well, we'll move on to universities now.
Yes, well, the European Youth Parliament was very successful and the organization became quite large with 25 national offices. And of course, the students who had been to a session said, well, we're going to university now, so we can't participate anymore. What are you doing for us? So that's when I set up what is called Europe 2020 at Oxford University, where we invited 10 students from different disciplines to look at the global situation and global management. So we would have, say, one student of medicine, a scientist, a doctor, an economist, an artist, etc., in one group, and they would come forward with ideas. And that, again, was a tremendous success, which the management schools in Europe, like IMEDE, Bocconi, INSEAD, then took on board and wanted to have that on their premises. So that was, again, a very interesting and successful time.
But very, very busy on your behalf, because it wasn't only the organisation where you did have support, but you were also fundraising to keep this going. So I understand at a later stage you handed it over to another organisation, is that correct?
Yes, well, when you are doing things like that, there are developments. And of course, there was the war in former Yugoslavia. And I decided to fly students out to participate in both the European Youth Parliament and in Europe 2020. And I got them out through Ancona Airport and flew them to Berlin to land on the roof of the Reichstag and come downstairs and talk to us. And Europe 2020, of course, went to different countries. But the problem there was then that the management schools really wanted to do things their own way. So it was not always easy to push through our ideas.
I think you really have had an extraordinary life and started such an amazing campaign to educate the younger people in the ways of education in Europe and the support for democracy in many ways. So it was an extraordinary period of time. Now, I know you met a number of the leading politicians, some of whom will be very familiar to us. Do you want to just mention some of the people that you worked with and some of them that you had meetings with?
Yes, well, some worked with me, others against me. Jacques Chirac, then Prime Minister of France, gave a news conference and said that he had a very good idea for the young people. This was a week after he got my letter, and saying that he was going to create a European Youth Parliament as soon as he would be president. So it was a good thing for him to put forward what he was going to do with young people. So I had to fight him. Thank goodness he didn't get elected, because I might have been in trouble then. But yeah, so I have some anecdotes, you know, like I had a meeting with the Prime Minister of Finland, Paavo Lipponen, in 96, and that was just a visit to discuss an event we would like to organize in Finland. He was hosting the G8 at the time, and therefore when I got to Helsinki, I didn't think I would be able to see him. But his secretary phoned me and said, well, why don't you come on, you know, at 10:30, that would be fine. And so I walked into his office and he said, well, this is, you really have a chance here. I sent the whole G8 for a walk to their conference center rather than in a bus. And that means we have 30 minutes. So that was good fun.
That's wonderful. Bettina, I know you have won a number of awards. If I can just mention some of them, the German Order of Merit, you were awarded for the work that you did with the Youth Parliament. Twice you were voted Woman of the Year, firstly the UK Woman of the Year in this field, and then you were voted by all the European countries as European Woman of the Year, which is really a wonderful achievement. But you also received the prestigious Freedom of the City of Athens for the promotion of democracy. And you had other awards for the work that you've done in Europe, which is really quite an achievement, and congratulations on all of that. Somewhere in the middle of all of this, you met and married Mike Evans and found your way to Cheltenham. You always, Bettina, you always cut an elegant and calm figure around the club. After such an exciting and rewarding life, and with your children and your grandchildren still in Europe, what is it that motivates you now?
Well, it's following politics, certainly, but my passion became collecting antiques. I developed my own skills of restoring furniture and selling little items on eBay, for instance. But my main interest was really, when I retired, was gardening and creating a very large French garden in Whitney, where we used to live before we downsized to Cheltenham. And now I've got a lovely little plot in the courtyard that I'm trying to keep tidy and interesting.
Well, I know those of us who had the good fortune to visit you there know how lovely it is and how well you have created that spot in Cheltenham. So, Bettina, we're really grateful for the time you've given us today and congratulate you on the many achievements that you've made in your life. But before you go, could you just choose a piece of music, a piece of music that means something to you?
Yes, well, it is the song of the European Youth Parliament, which was first played at the first event in Fontainebleau, and it's Imagine by the Beatles.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people sharing for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion too. hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as warm. Imagine no possessions. Wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. Brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing.